Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
The comics we'll be talking about in this episode originally came out on May 13th, 2009. Starting us off in DC Vertigo is The Unwritten by Mike Carey. This is the first issue, and it was priced at $1. Hard to turn down a new comic at $1.
Wasn't it like 75% off from DCVS, so it was like a quarter to us?
Yeah, yeah. I got my little pull list thing from my shipment here, and yeah, 25 cents. I mean, the
32 pages of story.
it's a steal at that price.
Even at $1, you know, it's 3 cents a page.
Now, I'll be honest, at either the dollar, certainly at the 25 cents, you know, price influences my expectations. The more expensive something is, the better I think it needs to be. That having been said, you know, I went into this thinking, 25 cents, I can afford that, you know, even while I was between jobs. And, you know, for people who didn't catch it last week, I do have a job now, so, you know, I'm going to start getting a couple more comics. But I went into this with no major expectations. And, you know, I'd read the couple of pages and previews, and I thought they were interesting, but I wasn't quite sure where they were going to go with it. And I really think this benefited from having 32 pages, because they were able to tell quite a bit in this first issue. And it's got a really kind of cool what-if-fiction-became-fact kind of an angle. And it's got a very Harry Potter kind of vibe to it, but it acknowledges that, and I'm okay with that. But the basic premise is, what if you have an author who wrote a book about a Harry Potter-ish kind of a character that was kind of sort of modeled on his son, maybe? Or maybe his son was modeled on the character, maybe? Or maybe his son didn't exist, kind of a thing. It was, and they cover that entire premise and establish it, you know, really well, I think, in this issue, both with the character trying to, I don't want to say cash in on his father's books or whatever, but use that as his celebrity aspect. And then the whole question gets raised, you know, was the character based on him? Is he even who he claims to be? And how the public reacts to that. And all of that, particularly the public reaction, you know, felt realistic. And, you know, this was a book that has a I don't want to say a metatextual aspect, but I mean, there are places where they go into flashbacks of what's in the books and the movies that the main character's father wrote. And, you know, those things were very clear when we're going into the movie, when we're not, all that. Again, I went into this with no major expectations, and I really, really enjoyed this. I thought it was much better than I was expecting that it would be or even could be. So I'm really glad I picked this up. I'm really glad DC priced it at $1, and even more so that DCBS had the 75% off. Because at $2.99, I might have passed on it. At $3.99, I certainly would have. But I'm really glad I read this.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed the story. I thought Mike Carey did an excellent job. I like how they wove the kind of scenes from the book in. You have the Tom Taylor character. He's doing the, you know, the real life stuff. You have the other things that kind of infringe in. They did a really nice job of integrating in like the kind of like website kind of things into the story and the news footage stuff into the story. I just thought he did an excellent job of putting this thing together. And like, I agree with what you said on having the 32 pages. It gave a really good chance to fit a lot of good story and forward movement into this. It set up a lot of mystery, and it certainly hooked me. I'm going to be reading the rest of the series. You know, I had only ordered this first issue and said, oh, I'm going to read it first, and then I'm going to see, you know, and I'll pick up the other issues. I thought this was extremely well done.
Yeah. Yeah, same here. Again, I had only ordered the first, and it was kind of a wait-and-see approach. But, you know, it passed with flying colors. You know, I felt not only did we get a good sense of who the quote-unquote real Tom Taylor was, we got enough of the flashbacks and enough talk about the fictional books his father wrote to get a feel for the Tommy Taylor character. And, of course, that, again, leans heavily on kind of the Harry Potter stuff, but that works very well because I come out of this feeling I know who the characters are, both the quote-unquote real-world ones and the fictional ones. And, you know, not every comic I read conveys that in a first issue.
And when they're doing the flashbacks and flash-forwards and other things, I was never unclear on what was what. You know, and sometimes they jump around like that and you can't really follow it, you know. And this one, I didn't have any problem with that at all. I just thought it was put together in a really nice way. And Kerry did an exceptional job on this issue. And I applaud Vertigo for just trying their best to get these things out in front of people. You know, I'm just, you know, sad that a lot of people are probably going to let this one go by. But for $1, go to the store and buy this thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, you cannot go wrong with 32 pages of story for $1. And it's a really good story. Well, I mean, I'm sure there are people who would not like this story. You know, it's like anything. You know, some people are going to like it and some people are not. But, you know, me, this is something where you look at this and you like it, you should really support the series. And that's, I got to imagine that's what Vertigo's going for. And like I said, that they've been trying out so many different marketing things like this to push the readership on their books. I really applaud what they're doing. And I hope they have some good success with it.
I agree with that because this strikes me as kind of the next sort of breakout hit title for Vertigo. You know, kind of like how, you know, Fables has been to a degree, Why the Last Man, and they've had a couple others that have really, you know, clicked with the audience and worked. I think this has that potential. And this also has the potential of bringing in non-comic book readers just on the whole Harry Potter angle.
Yeah. Well, I could easily see this, you know, as it goes along and gets collected in trade paperbacks, selling really well to the bookstore crowd.
Yeah, yeah. This is something that, you know, if it gets enough of an audience on the monthly side to stick around, those trades I would expect to start seeing, you know, once they come out, to keep showing up on the trade list month after month.
But it is going to need the word of mouth, because the one thing that I would say is that the title, The Unwritten, it doesn't tell you that much about it, and it's not really that much of a grabber, at least for me. It's not that catchy. And, I mean, I can see where it would potentially play into the character and everything, but it's not something that's just going to, like, grab somebody off the shelf and say, you must buy this book. So it's going to word of mouth is going to be crucial for this one.
Yes. Well, and going to the name of the book for a second, The Unwritten came out the same week as The Unknown and Unthinkable.
Yes.
So it was a very un-week this week.
The un-week.
But yeah, everyone who hasn't checked this out, I strongly recommend it, particularly, again, if you like kind of the Harry Potter thing. And it's not derivative of that, but it's again, kind of leveraging that those archetypes, that common aspect of our culture, I guess, would be the way to put it.
Yeah. I mean, I gave this one a 5. I really liked it, and then I just kicked it up. You know, I was like a high 4, and then I kicked it up to a 5 just on general principles for getting 32 pages for a buck and, you know, for how well-structured I thought the story was and how well it conveyed everything in it. I mean, I have no complaints about any of the material in this book at all.
The only thing that even comes close to a complaint to me is the that one page with the website. I think some people may kind of skim past that if they're not paying attention. I didn't, but I, you know, it's the only cause for concern for me. I, again, didn't have any problem with the flashbacks. I really felt I got to know and care about these characters. And, you know, this book had to prove itself to me in the first issue, and it did. So, You know, I was at that same boat of, you know, is it a 4 or is it a 5 between the lower price and just how good of a job it did and just how much I liked it. It gets a 5 from me too. You know, if all first issues were this successful, I think we'd have a healthier industry.
Yeah. And again, it's not that everyone's not going to like this book, but everyone's not going to like any individual thing. What I think this does is that people who are fans of this type of story and this type of genre, everything's there to pull you in to this story.
Mm-hmm. Shall we move on to our next book?
Sure. We've got Dark Reign Young Avengers number 1 from Marvel.
What did you think of this one?
I liked it a lot less than the Unwritten.
You're too kind.
I like some of the Dark Reign elements, story elements that Marvel's putting out, but I'm kind of at a saturation point of, you know, just lots of bad guys. I mean, I don't read comics to read stories about lots of bad guys unless they're being triumphed over by the good guys, you know, typically. And, you know, some of the dialogue in this kind of fell flat for me. The Enchantress's lisp was extremely irritating. I like the art just fine. I mean, the art was good in my opinion, but the story totally didn't grab me.
Well, this was one of the few Dark Reign things, you know, in terms of Dark Reign, colon, whatever, that, you know, I had pre-ordered because it was 75% off, so it was $1. Now, that's after the DCBS discount. I mean, the $3.99 cover price is a bit harsh.
Yeah, and I didn't buy it from DCBS. I went to the store to buy this for the show, so I paid $3.99 plus tax, and I'm telling you, for $3.99 plus tax, this is not cutting it.
Well, it's only 22 pages a story. And even that, I think, is being charitable, because if you go to the two-page splash at the beginning where they have the opening credits...
Yeah, it's, sideways. That was really bad.
It's one page, turned sideways and expanded to two. And that right there, both in terms of the why is it sideways, and then wait, this really isn't more than a page of art, really set the book off on a bad foot for me. You know, I felt like I was being, I don't want to say ripped off, but... It seemed like a cheat there, and I didn't appreciate that. It was a waste of a page. And, you know, I went in thinking, you know, Paul Cornell, he's doing Captain Britain. He's done some Doctor Who stuff. He's a really good writer. So I had some expectations here that this could be fun. This could be good. But, you know, the intro page before we even get to the story sets expectations that we're going to get some sort of appearance by the real Young Avengers, not this Dark Reign group of, you know, villainous replacements. They show up in one panel at the end. So right there, again, expectations not met. And as for this new team of Dark Reign Young Avengers, I never really was clear on who they were or why I should care. You know, is this Enchantress the one that we've seen elsewhere as part of the whole Asgard stuff? Well, why has she suddenly got a lisp and now, you know, in the teeny bopper set or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, I don't recall, I don't have perfect recall. I don't remember if since Straczynski's reboot, when the Avengers have come back, have we seen the Enchantress and the Executioner? Maybe they got, when they got brought back younger, goofier, or whatever, I don't know.
I don't think we've seen that in the pages of Thor or anywhere else, and this certainly didn't make it clear if that had happened.
Yeah, I just kind of like, you know, I kind of went by it as, I don't know.
The bottom line is it didn't work for me, and, you know, I felt like even after I read the whole issue, I still don't know who these guys are or why I should care. And I've got faith in Paul Cornell and that he's got another 4 issues in the series to kind of clarify that, but it was a really, really weak first issue, even for a miniseries. It so far seems fairly superfluous to the Dark Reign stuff as far as I can tell. I mean, you're reading more of it than I am right now, so correct me if I'm wrong. Does this really seem to...
I am not reading any of the... I mean, most of the miniseries based on Dark Reign, the only one I'm getting is Fantastic Four, because it's the only one that's got a $2.99 price point.
Okay.
I'm just like, I'm not a big fan of Marvel miniseries at the $3.99 price point for 22 pages. You know, unless it's like some really strong creative team that I follow, like I'm happy to get the Kurt Busiek Marvels miniseries, right?
Right,
for
$3.99. Right.
But, you know, this one, I had never heard of this. Well, actually, I have heard of Mark Brooks, and I, you know, but I'm not like, he's not, you know, Alex Ross or something. And, you know, one thing about the art, while each individual panel was, you know, nice enough art, the storytelling was a little weak. You know, when the melter melted the sidewalk, I didn't really even know what was going on there until a couple of panels later or a page later when they're talking about it in the bar. Like, oh, did you see what he did in the, you know, when he melted the sidewalk and all this kind of stuff? And it's like, okay, well, that's what that was. You know, it was like really not apparent to me, anyway, from the art.
Well, the one thing I'll say on the art that didn't work for me is, in a lot of cases, instead of having a black line around the outer edge of the characters, they had like a white one. And it made the art feel different and not in a way that really worked for me. It's not bad art, and it wasn't a major thing, but just on a almost subconscious level, it kind of irked me. And there was something about the coloring that made the lighting feel overly dramatic in most cases that didn't work for me either.
When you bring that up, it's like there is an awful lot of shadowing on faces where it looks like they're standing on top of a spotlight shining up at their chin or something. I don't understand. They must like carry a flashlight around with them or something and shine it up at their face in almost every scene. It's kind of funny.
And, you know, a lot of that I'll chalk up to the colorist, and perhaps unfairly so. But, you know, the coloring I thought was weak overall. In a lot of places it was just kind of flat and muted. Again, the lighting and stuff. So I went in hoping for more than I got with this. I'm at the point where if I was feeling charitable, I would give it a 3, but I'm not, so it's getting a 2.
I did the same exact thing. I was like, I gave it a 2, and I'm like, oh, is it really? Should I give it a 3? And I'm like, no, it'll stay at a 2. Highly unrecommended, in my opinion. 18 cents a page, 18.1 cents a page. This was absolutely not worth 18.1 cents a page.
It's one that can safely be skipped. Now, I'm curious where Paul Cornell is going with this. Again, I think he's a good writer and can pull it out. But, man, off to a bad start.
Now, that being said, I can almost guarantee I'm going to find this series in a 50-cent bin somewhere down the line. And I'll pick it up to see what happens for 50 cents. But $3.99, I think not.
So anything else on that one or move on to the next?
No, we'll move on to Knights of the Dinner Table, number 150. Now, that is an achievement.
Yes, yes it is.
For a really tiny indie company that pretty much all they put out is Knights of the Dinner Table. I mean, over the years, they've put out Hackmasters of Evernight, Knights of the Dinner Table Illustrated, and some things like that. But, I mean, essentially, this is the only comic they put out, and it has been coming out pretty much like clockwork since they started this thing up, and it has been going on for a really long time. And this is an example for me. Again, it's a niche book. This is absolutely not something that is going to appeal to the general audience, I don't think. But, I mean, if you've ever if you've ever done any kind of role-playing game playing, I can't comprehend someone who has played and enjoyed role-playing games not getting a kick out of this book.
I would agree with that, with the slight spin that the more of a gamer you are, the more you will enjoy this book.
That's true.
because I have been a gamer in the past. You know, I played D&D, Champions, all that stuff a bit when I was a kid. These days, I mean, I haven't played a role-playing game in ages, so I don't really consider myself a gamer at heart. So I'm kind of on the edge of the niche audience for this. And I'll be honest, when I had to make budget cuts and stuff, because it's normally a $4.99 book, you know, until we decided to do $150, I was going to drop the thing a few months ago. Just because it's more expensive than the average comic or whatever. Now, normally it's 80 pages. This comic right here, $8.99 cover price, 144 pages.
Yeah, and not counting the ads, I counted 55 pages of comics and 70 pages of other material that was not like letters pages and stuff. So like they've got a complete role-playing game in here called Dog, the role-playing game. You can like role-play being a dog, and they've got like rules for cats in there and stuff. They've got a kind of a D&D-ish or Hackmaster is kind of an analog to Dungeons and Dragons. They've got a an adventure module of that in here. They have it's a reprint, but they have a two-page, the history behind all those funny dice that they use in role-playing games by Dave Arneson, who is the co-creator, along with Gary Gygax, of Dungeons & Dragons, and he did the original Blackmoor game. And I'm sure I read that, you know, a long time ago when it was first published, but reading it again was really nice. And Dave Arneson passed away very recently in April, so this was you know, a little bit of tribute to him in this issue also. I mean, it's just lots of stuff. Every issue, they usually have a feature in here about comics that by Tony Digirolamo, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, and he talks about various comics and what the game fodder potential is of that comic. You know, it's like how much you could take that comic and use it as kind of a hook into a role-playing game. They've got a regular article about websites and things on the web. They've got a regular article about computer games that they talk about. They usually they have a gaming thing about the movies. In this issue, they talk about the Aliens movie franchise and taking that and turning it into, you know, and how that would be applicable to being role-playing game. I mean, there's just all kinds of stuff in each one of these. Now, one other thing I'll point out about it is that this is, I mean, the art is extremely crude.
Well, it's comic strip type art, not comic book type art.
Right. It's just like these guys sitting around a table in a very simple, you know, kind of Charlie Brownish kind of simple line work on these characters. It's the humorous stories and situations that come up that really make it what it is. And it's not always D&D sword and sorcery kind of gaming. In different issues, they play different kinds of games. They're playing a pirate game in one of these. They've played superhero role-playing games. They've played spy, they've played horror, they've played western, you know, all the different genres of role-playing games. You know, they play all the different ones, and they'll have stories set in those different themes. And something that they did for this anniversary issue, which they also did back at issue 100, is they made all the stories are self-contained, so you can read just this issue and it's not part of the continuing storyline. So they suspended the continuing storylines that are running through the magazine for this one issue so that somebody could pick this up and get a nice self-contained example. The only thing I missed in it was they didn't have the Black Hands, Weird Pete's group, you know, with Nitro,
right,
and Weird Pete,
right,
and those guys, which I like those guys. There's different gaming groups. In this, you have the Knights of the Dinner Table themselves, which have the five people, and then there's another group, and then there's Patty's Perps, and, you know, all these different different groups of gamers that, you know, they'll have different stories that feature on the different ones, and they all have personalities, you know.
Well, it's most of these comic stories are kind of almost minimalist, sitcomish sort of a thing. It's done like it's a stage play or whatever, in so much as you've got one set for the most part in these things. Like you said, people sitting around a table, and it's all character-based. You know, what are they saying? How do they interact? You know, what shenanigans are they trying to pull and that kind of stuff? And it's really a different kind of a writing than you get in most other comic books. You know, and I find that very enjoyable.
Yeah.
Now, you were saying that they cover a lot of the genres and stuff, and that's true, but I do think they lean very heavily in the kind of standard Dungeons & Dragons, you know, area, which is, you know, kind of the core of gaming.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That is their core, but they do, it's not exclusively that. They'll have bits and pieces of the other ones.
But, I mean, since I started reading it, which probably goes back to around issue 114 or something, because I had gotten a year's worth or whatever from when we first talked about this way back when, if they've covered superheroes more than once in that time, I'd be surprised.
Oh, probably not. I mean, you'll see, you know, one genre. I mean, like every couple of years, they'll do a superhero story. You know, every now and again, they'll do a Western one where they're playing Cattle Punk, or, you know, they'll do the spy thing or something. It's just like they go through the different genres every now and again.
Yeah, yeah. Now, one other thing I will say, coming at this from more of a comic geek perspective than a gaming perspective, is going back to that column they've got on comic books. I do like how he's taking the approach of, you know, how much of this could you use to influence your game setting and stuff like that. I think that's a cool, you know, look at comics, a cool angle to take. But man, Tony picks fairly obscure stuff.
He's done more mainstream stuff. I think this one is just like he was picking up lots of weird indie stuff when he was at WonderCon from people.
I'm willing to bet if I were to go through all the issues I've got, which again is, you know, 30 or something, 40 or something, and list out all the comics he's reviewed and compare it to my list, if more than a quarter of the ones he's reviewed are things I've gotten, I'd be surprised. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, because, I mean, let's face it, everyone knows who Batman is, and they could probably figure out how they could influence their gaming, you know, with that or whatever. So going after the more obscure, I think, is good, and these are the titles that really need the exposure and stuff. But, you know, his taste tends to run to the more indie and the more obscure than mine.
Well, I think you hit on the point of that, though, is that any DC comic is going to, you know, have a similar potential, you know, from this angle, you know, if it's not something different.
Yeah. And again, they're going at it from a mainstream gaming perspective, leaning heavily towards the D&D, you know, realm. And most mainstream comics are superhero stuff. So, you know, you've seen one, you've seen them all to a degree in terms of how it can influence your gaming. So again, makes sense. Overall, you know, I think this is a really good bang for the buck kind of a item. And it's as much a magazine as a comic. And I certainly don't read it cover to cover, but every issue I found something enjoyable, and I haven't once regretted getting it. It's, if you're a gamer, I highly recommend this. You know, if you just want to keep tabs on what's going on in the gaming, you know, industry and culture, this is a great way to do it.
Yeah, I skip a lot of the back material. I mean, I don't read the modules for games generally. Steven does, he likes those. But,
well, I mean, there's something for everybody with 80 pages a month. I mean, that's a lot of content.
Well, I mean, it's like, for instance, I think one of the letter writers in here makes the point that, you know, look at any magazine that you get, you know, whether it be Time or People or, you know, Newsweek, Us Weekly, you know, Sports Illustrated, whatever. Most people don't read those things cover to cover.
Right.
They will read certain articles and they'll skip other ones. And even you look at any of those magazines, right? And they're $5 or $6 a piece now. So the normal price on this magazine for 80 pages, the normal price on any other magazine, and the value you're getting for your money is, I think it's a good value. And, you know, this issue, you know, a little skewed, but even just reading the comics, you're getting out of there for 16.3 cents a page, which is less than that Dark Reign Young Avengers.
And even yes.
And even though the art is significantly minimalist compared to the art in Dark Reign Young Avengers, I enjoyed this so much more than Dark Reign Young Avengers.
Well, you get a better sense of the characters. You know, the whole bit with Patty sitting in for a gaming session, you know, as a substitute player or whatever, that whole thing plays out, and it's like, okay, when it's all said and done, it's like, wow, okay, that was cool. I see where they went. I got the relationship aspects of how she fit into the whole group, etc., and I enjoyed the story, whereas with Young Avengers, I came out wondering, you know, again, who are these characters and why should I care? You know, the nature of these stories in Knights of the Dinner Table is, within a page or two, if you haven't gotten a feel for the characters, you know, I'd be surprised. It's a highly accessible, you know, and somewhat addictive storytelling style. I will say, I was surprised this was a saddle-stitched comic, because, frankly, I did not know they could do that at 144 pages. This is the biggest one I've ever seen. 80 was the prior biggest.
They have some industrial staples holding this thing together.
Like, damn.
Another thing that's kind of fun, and a lot of times as I'm reading the book, I kind of skip over them, but at the bottom of every page of the comics, they've got like these pull quotes from previous issues. And, you know, they attribute them. They're just like fun little, you know, histories.
Well, you know, it's funny you mention that, because that brings up the notion of continuity and stuff. And one of the things I enjoy about these stories is, you know, I'll read some of them, but not all of them each issue. And there's a definite sense of continuity, but never to the point of I'm lost because I didn't read the last 149 issues or whatever.
Right.
You know, they give you what you need and go with that.
And as an example of how, you know, being a gamer really helps. Well, like one of the quotes, I'm going to read one. It says, "How many times have we been screwed over by a hireling, huh? Talk about an engraved invitation for BA to mess with us. You might as well put a sign on your frickin' head saying, screw with me." You know, it's like, it's BA is the game master. So, you know, it's just, they got little quotes like that. It's just fun. You kind of, I remember that. It was back from issue 117. So, you know, a few years back.
Well, one of the other things that's kind of fun with this is if you go to page 15, which is the start of the comic section, BA is talking about how he just sold, you know, one of his games, or the game he wrote way back when that he'd lost money on, whatever. And it's the game they have later in this issue.
Yeah, and they actually have talked about that role-playing game that he wrote a number of times over the years, just in passing.
It's got that sense of history and reality to it because of that, which is fun.
Anyway, I gave it a 4. It suffered for me by not having the black hands in the issue.
I gave it a 4 only in so much as at 144 pages of really good content, it's just a bit overwhelming. You know, it's I don't want to say too much of a good thing, But yeah, I mean, to a degree it is. I mean, this is good stuff, but, you know, I knew going in there was no way I was going to read even, you know, most of this. And at some point I'll go back and stuff. Definitely a title I recommend if you're a gamer. The less of a gamer you are, the less I recommend it.
Yeah.
And again, I feel I fall kind of on the periphery of that. I don't consider myself a gamer, but there's enough good stuff in here that I'm enjoying it while I'm reading it.
Yeah, I would say anyone who has ever played and enjoyed a fantasy RPG definitely needs to pick up an issue of this comic.
And again, it's both at the $8.99 here for the 144 pages and the usual $4.99 for the 80 pages. It's a really good value for the money. It's a great format for a magazine.
So speaking of best deals ever, I'll talk about the deal I got today. I was at my normal local convention, Frank and Sons, that runs every Wednesday and Saturday. And this one guy that I bought from before, he's usually got a bunch of 50-cent bins, and he had a whole bunch of boxes today, 50 cents. But then I was pulling out a big stack, and he told me, you can fill a short box for $12. You have to buy the short box. But a guy down the way was selling short boxes for $3. So I got a short box, filled it, brought it home. I counted the comics when I got home. I got 232 comic books for $15.
Nice.
And I mean, I got recent stuff, a little farther back stuff. I mean, I got, you know, at a certain point, I was like, it's like throwing stuff in there to fill the box out, you know? It's like, I got about 40 issues of the Exile series.
Oh.
You know, the Tony, but I never picked that series up. And I was like, $0.065 a piece, I guess I'll try this.
What issue range?
17 through 60.
Oh, that's some good stuff. That was one that I thought started really, really strong with Judd Winnick. Actually, I think it's some of his best writing. And up through the range you've got, I think that's some good stuff. There was a point in the later half of the series where it kind of lost its way a little.
Bunch of Winnick, and then Tony Bedard comes in around 50, it looks like. Or 49, 48, 46. Looks like Bedard came in at 46. I've got up through 85, and Bedard's still writing it there, too. And I like Tony Bedard. I just never really picked this up. I got the entire Son of Vulcan 6-issue series. I got a whole bunch of Devil's Due Dungeons & Dragons comics that I had never picked up. Mm-hmm. And some of these, God, I don't know who buys them for the full price, but I mean, some of these were like the prestige editions that were like $9 a piece.
Damn.
Cover price. And I got some variant, like second printing, black and white kind of sketch, quote unquote, covers of Green Lantern Rebirth. I just didn't buy those the first time around, but for a couple of cents, you know, I'll get a cover just to admire it. And, you know.
Yeah, let's face it, for 6 or 7 cents a copy, it doesn't take much to be worth it.
I didn't even think I was going to get that many comics in the box. It's just that none of them were bagged and boarded. You know, normally I'm thinking, you get about 100, 120 comics in a short box, but that's when they're bagged and boarded, and that adds a lot of space. And it's like, none of these are bagged and boarded. So it's like, wow, when I counted them when I got home, I'm like, my God, there's 232 comics in here. At the end, I was just like, Greg was helping me. It's like, I didn't know what to put in the box. And I'm just like, Greg's friend, Andrew, is getting into comics and he likes Batman. And I said, pull out a handful of Batman comics from over there and put them in there. So we got him like about 10 or 12 Batman comics to fill the thing. Oh, I got a bunch of issues of Solo, you know, the DC one that I hadn't bought.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Those are like $4.99 cover prices on those things. Like, but 6 or 7 of them.
Cool.
But it's just like all kinds of good stuff. Wow. In my history of great deals, that was probably the greatest one I stumbled upon. It's like right place at the right time. He had just bought like a 190 long box collection, I think, from a store that closed or something, and he was trying to get rid of it.
Cool.
So what else did you read this week that you liked?
Captain Britain. Enjoyed that. Although apparently that series is ending, which again we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. That I mean, it's a bunch of B-list characters, which you know a lot of people just aren't going to be spending the money to read their stories these days, which is unfortunate. Because again, Paul Cornell doing some great stuff there. Red Fables, really enjoying that crossover. Green Lantern Corps, the Blackest Night stuff, really good.
So that Fables crossover is the bizarro mirror image of the Titans Death Trap crossover, which is one of the worst piles of rubbish I have ever been, you know?
Yes.
Oh, it's terrible, isn't it?
I'm liking Teen Titans, you know, up until the crossover stuff. The crossover stuff, part of it, though, is it's hitting some hot buttons for me. Jericho is a villain. I don't like on the face of it. You know, the way they're doing him as a villain, I think, is even worse than just the basic idea of him as a villain. And the execution of the storyline, it's taking far too long to tell this story. It doesn't need to have all these characters involved. It's rambling, it's pointless, and, you know, I really don't think that the editor in charge of the Titans franchise at DC these days has a grasp on, you know, what to do with the books and where to take them.
Yeah, I'm real close to pulling the plug on the entire Titans franchise. I might pull back to just Teen Titans, but it's just, this thing is not working for me.
They need to do something about this stuff really quick. Because if it continues to go off the rails much longer, I think sales are going to plummet. And deservedly so, yeah.
Vigilante book is awful.
Also, I think doubled in sales because of the crossover.
Oh, yeah, but, I mean, ugh.
Yeah. And that's a book that doesn't even need to exist. They have yet to justify, you know, why it's out there. I mean, these days, I think every book, when it gets started, has to have some kind of a unique hook, unique aspect, something towards not just another comic. I felt Unwritten this week did that beautifully. I thought Dark Reign Young Avengers failed at that miserably. Vigilante, you know, I mean, another guy with a gun. Great, okay, fine, who cares?
Yeah.
You know, it's a overly watered-down Punisher at best.
Yeah. I thought that Walking Dead was really good. Secret Six, I don't know if you suspended that one or not.
No, I still got that.
But they did a really good issue of Secret Six, I thought.
I liked it. I thought it was good.
Ultimate Spider-Man, yeah, it was passable. I mean, it's coming to the end of the run, and I'm really not certain at all that I'm going to have anything to do with the Ultimate Universe reboot. I might just take an entire pass on it.
I'm debating that too, actually. I felt this issue of Ultimate Spider-Man, it just didn't click with me, and I'm not sure if it's because there was a delay from the last issue, if the story momentum was just shot, or if it's just that because they're ending it, I just don't really care. So, I was disappointed with that.
Yeah.
Oracle, The Cure number 3.
I was really disappointed in how that ended.
I was really disappointed in how that didn't end. It just kind of fizzled.
Yeah, well, I mean, it wasn't anything like I was... Yeah, you're right. I mean, there was
no cure.
There was nothing. It was like, what? I guess Wendy came out of the coma. Spoiler. No, it was like, saw that comment, but it's like, what? This was. I had high hopes for it. I liked the first issue a lot. Second issue was okay, and the third issue, it fell flat for me.
Well, it's funny, because I liked the third issue. It's just the ending, there was no payoff.
Yeah.
You know, I if there was a fourth issue to give closure or something, that would help. But again, that's another one of, okay, you're trying to cash in on Battle for the Cowl, but why is this book out there? What's the point of it? And they failed to do that.
Yeah. How many total books did you get? I got 31.
I got 17. I am trying to ramp back up.
And you got your free Comic Book Day comics from DCBS, right, in this shipment?
Yes. Yes, I did. I did not count those five. So.
Yeah, so I got 31 plus the five free Comic Book Day comics, which I don't particularly understand why they sent them out so far after Free Comic Book Day. It's kind of like I was out of the mood by the time I got them, and a couple of them I had actually picked up at comic shops you know, in the last 3 weeks.
The only two I read were The Green Lantern Blackest Night, which I enjoyed, and Loving Capes, which is always brilliant.
Yeah. What are the other ones you got?
The Wolverine Origin of an X-Man, Impact University, and Avengers. But it was a busy week, and I didn't have time to get to those.
Yeah, so I got... The only ones new that I got were the Ape, Cartoonapalooza, Mercy, Sparks, Under New Management, and Wolverine Origin of an X-Man. The other two, I got the Cyber Force Hunter-Killer one and the Love and Capes one I had picked up previously. And so they're doubles. And then I got the Nova statue, classic Nova statue from Bowen.
Cool. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
Yep.
Join us next week when we discuss Vigilante number 6 from DC, Fantastic Four number 566 from Marvel, and Boys Herochasm number 1 from Dynamite Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.